This is an Enterprise Times podcast. I'm here with Andrew Kinder, Vice President, Industry and Solutions Strategy at Infor.
Hello.
Hi, Andrew. We're here at Make UK Conference. Earlier today, you're one of the speakers in a panel discussion on monetizing your digital future. You spoke about four broad areas that manufacturers should consider when looking at a digital strategy. Can you repeat what they were, what you see them as being?
When manufacturers get started, what they're looking to try and do is find the money. Where should they invest in first? And we use a framework that we think allows manufacturers to actually think about where the money and where the opportunities are. The four quadrants include first looking at your customers. What is it that you need to do to be different and differentiated? Is it something that you can do to add new service revenues, new service streams, value add? Is it an e-commerce? Is it a way of doing business with you? Those are all things that are in the customer segment. The second segment is looking internally at your operations. Manufacturers gravitate quite naturally to this because they are predisposed to look at how well their equipment and their assets are being utilized. So what can you do around connecting assets together, looking at ways of optimizing production lines or optimizing your service and putting in place things like predictive maintenance programs so that machines don't break down? Maybe it's optimizing operations in the warehouse, but anything to do with your internal operations. The third segment leaves your own enterprise behind a little bit and encourages companies to look outward at their supply chain network. What is it you can do to better connect customers, suppliers, co-manufacturers, distribution organizations into a very high visible supply chain network so that you can orchestrate that better and bring improvement in those areas? And the last area, which we encourage people not to forget about, is the productivity of your people. Are there tools and technologies that you can put in place that help salespeople do their jobs better or engineers do their jobs better or people on the shop floor? What we tend to find is if we look for opportunity in those four quadrants, we'll be able to then put together a technology roadmap that helps the company move toward those ambitions.
You talk about customers. What about customer's customer? Because that can be a forgotten thing sometimes.
It is, and actually particularly for companies who are selling through a distribution channel, we're encouraging people to think more about what are you in the marketplace? Are you a manufacturer of products or are you providing a service element to an end consumer? We have an example there of an organization who ship product through a distribution channel, and the challenge with that is it's a limitation to their growth in that they have no brand recognition with the end consumer. What we encourage there is a digital strategy that would create a condition where the end consumer understands the value of buying that product when they go to the distributor and buy it. So we do encourage people to think about where are you in the value chain and how can you elevate your brand and have an experience that makes either your customer place more business with you or your customer's customer go in and demand that product from their distributor.
And I believe your end customer in that case is a shrimp or sometimes a cow.
Yes, it is. So the example I was thinking of there, they're one of the largest animal feeds businesses in the world. Their challenge in the marketplace is having brand identification with the farmer who purchases the product from a distributor and encouraging them not to just buy on price and availability, which would be the norm, but actually encouraging them to buy on something that's important to the farmer, which is how quickly can I bring the maturity of the animal to market. What Nutreco actually have to offer is they know everything about animal health and animal growth and the conditions upon which the animals will come to maturity, and they will blend a feed specifically for that farm or for that user for a particular time of year, so that, for example, in shrimp, they could bring four harvests a year rather than three. It's very important to farmers about animal health and animal productivity. So yeah, that's a great example. Increases profitability.
You talked about the internal effectiveness and efficiency within manufacturing organizations, but are there any areas they sometimes forget because they do look at their warehouse, they do look at their distribution, but there are other processes inside the organization that can also benefit surely from that kind of side. It's not always about the shop floor.
Digital means so many different things to companies, and in fact, as long as it's oriented toward a business goal, maybe digital for an organization could be as simple as, you know, becoming a paperless business or operating a barcode system in the warehouse or using a pick-to-light system in a warehouse to improve your picking efficiency. Digital doesn't have to mean complete reinvention like Uber or Netflix. It can be a series of profitable steps in a bigger journey, as long as each one of them has got some sort of business goal and a business saving associated with it.
On the supply chain network, and you talked about partners, suppliers, co-manufacturers, can you give an example of how Infor Technology has helped an organization there?
Infor is very fortunate in that it owns and runs probably the largest commerce supply chain network in the world, and that has hundreds, or if not thousands, of companies on it, and we have something like 80% of the world's shipping organizations already registered on it as well. It is a platform for collaboration. So, for example, a large business like a fashion business or a manufacturing business shipping product across the world, they're taking advantage of that platform so that they know exactly where the product is at any moment in time. So where is it and when is it going to land at the port? Now, you might think that's an easy thing to do, but given the fact that there's so much variation in the journey across the ocean and then which port it's going to go into and then what the dwell time is in that particular port, what Infor have become very good at is knowing where everything is on the water. Therefore, we can make predictions in terms of when that particular ship is going to land, how long it's going to take to get through the port, and therefore how you should synchronize and orchestrate your carry-on distribution so that it arrives exactly on time to distribute effectively and still meet customer due date. Companies save millions through having that sort of real-time visibility available to them.
One of the panelists earlier advocated an experimental strategy where companies should look to do small investments in innovation. In their case, they were taking students, as almost sandwich students, to come in and have a look at a business process and recommend an innovative digital alternative for that business processes. What is digital transformation? Is it an evolution, which I see that more as, or is it a revolution? Because it's talked about in different ways.
I would tend to suggest that it's a revolution pursued through a series of evolutionary steps. I like the thought that you can turn to the young who've got maybe different skill sets, different ways of looking at business problems and tapping into their creativity to solve them. What I would caution against, though, is a series of disconnected projects that don't have a business goal in mind. They will be interesting. They may save a little bit of money, but you're not building to anything of sustenance. I think the better digital transformation stories and the ones that truly have a transformative effect on a business means it started with a business innovation in mind to start with. So in other words, there is a business goal. You are trying to do something. You're trying to streamline a series of business efficiencies to reduce cost, or you're trying to be different in the marketplace. So you're pursuing a differentiation strategy. You've never done that before. By definition, it's differentiation. Once you've established that vision, I think what digital technologies or technologies in general allow you to do is have the freedom and the space to plot a course toward that pattern, but in a series of steps, each of which are rapid, have a business goal associated with them, so you can achieve something quickly in weeks rather than years, but you're building towards something which has a transformative effect. If you take the example from the panelists this morning from Atlas Copco, they kind of started their journey maybe 15 years ago. What was interesting about their story is it started before the days of the industrial internet, but they still had that vision about connecting pumps and compressors and doing something with data. All companies now can think in terms of what should my business be, because the building blocks, the foundational building blocks, are accessible to all of us. It's just the way you bring them together. That's where the magic is, the way you bring all those building blocks together to achieve something that's quite unique to your business.
In that, we're seeing a lot of servitization around manufacturing, aren't we? The introduction of services into manufacturing as opposed to just producing a straightforward product.
Most businesses, it's hard to get away from the fact there's a certain amount of commoditization. Whatever it is that you design and build, somebody else is going to try and design and build it better, faster, cheaper. The way in which manufacturers are looking to differentiate themselves is complement that with a service element. Because the service element is harder to maneuver around. If you can get lock-in with a customer or customer's customer through your service element, then that becomes a reason why they buy your product. Another one of our customers went through exactly that. They are a equipment provider. 10 years ago, they just bought and sold that equipment, high capital investment. When the crash hit in 2008, 2009, people moved away from buying it, large capital expenses. Instead, they went into rental. And then in the last 2 to 3 years, I know that they've started to introduce now an outcome-based charging model whereby they're actually selling the outcome. In that particular case, it's power generation or volume of litres, like a Rolls-Royce power by the hour scenario. But they have all three business models in their environment right now, and the market will determine which one's most successful. But yes, I think there is a tremendous push toward companies minor reinventing themselves and deciding how they can move into a different service-based model.
There is an alternative approach, because you talk about commoditization, but there's also personalization. There's a growing trend amongst manufacturers to personalize products down to the individual, or even individual dog, as we heard earlier as well.
The example on the panel today, again, is great. Personalised pet food for your pet. It is about that sort of mass customisation model. And a lot of the equipment manufacturers that we're with, that will be one of the ways in which they'll pursue a differentiation strategy. But to do that requires the front-end digital strategy and the back-end digital strategy connected together. In other words, it's great to be able to offer on your website the ability to configure a product, like if you can imagine it configuring a car to be exactly your specification. But if you can't quickly, easily and cost-effectively translate that into a configured car on the shop floor, then the reality is you won't fulfill that business ambition. Connecting that strategy as a golden thread right the way through the organization is very important. And I actually think one of the things that was good about Tails.com today is how he described that his business model and his technology model were totally intertwined. It was a very good example of taking mass customization through the business and developing technologies that supported that.
He acknowledged that they probably had an advantage in the sense that they were a startup, though, and they did design that from scratch. And they came actually from Grays in terms of the founders, so they had the business model already prepped, in a sense, from Grays and just moved it into pet foods. If you're a 40-year-old business, that's not so easy, though, because challenges came up before is, A, you've got a lot of business processes in place, you've got equipment, and you've got people who are probably inured in a culture that isn't like a startup and isn't necessarily used to change. How should they look to approach this?
Yeah, that came up in the panel session today. People talked about we need a fresh culture, a different mindset. Some of the audience members who are manufacturers, they're all owners of manufacturers, were talking about recruitment strategies, apprenticeships, bringing design thinkers into the organization, bringing software engineers into an equipment production because so much of it is now becoming software related. For other people, it would be partnerships, maybe partnerships with people like us, your technology provider that would help you think through, well, what should your business be? What's the art of the possible? What technology components do you need? Where are you starting from today? And can we help you plot a course to where you want to be? So I think both have merit. You can go through the partnership model. You can go through the cultural shift model. I guess the only model is that's not advised is ignore it. You know, don't just sit there and hope that it will get better. You have to take some form of action.
On that partnership model, Infor are a major multinational company. If I'm a small manufacturer or a small company, look to partner, then I wouldn't necessarily think that Infor are going to service my needs. So do you have a partner ecosystem to support that, that may be a better fit? And would you advise people to go somewhere different?
Infor does have a large and growing integration model, if you like, an ecosystem model. Think about it this way. Our own industry, we talk about digital transformation, our own industry is going through a digital transformation. How many people want to buy perpetual licenses like they did before? They want the rental model. They want companies like us to own the software, deliver the software at a service level, not have to invest in hardware, not have to invest in the technological skills to do upgrades. That's what they pay people like us for. Companies, to some extent, will turn increasingly to their technology providers because we're no longer providing just software, we're providing a service. Our network of our consulting skills, but also our partners' consulting skills, will be part of the service that people want to buy. The old notion of your technology vendor just sells you the licenses and somebody else has the expertise has to change, will change, and we, like many other businesses, will have transitioned from a product-based company to a service-based company. It's happening, and it's happening fast.
If I'm a small manufacturer, what is the right kind of partner that I need to look for?
Infor has a large ecosystem of partners. One could go to a local partner, one of our many local partners, and you could take the consulting and the technology skills from themselves, but the software is still being authored and run. So the management of the software itself and running that in the business is still done through Infor, but a local friendly partner who's close to you, who's local to the market, maybe knows your industry particularly well. So a lot of our partners are focusing more on becoming very industry specific. And that way you're getting the skills not only in the software, but in how is the software deployed in a dairy or in a cheese company. So it becomes very highly specific to that industry. You're gaining additional knowledge in that way.
And we talked about doing lots of innovation, and there is a balancing that overall strategic thinking behind the innovation and between doing lots of projects. And you can't afford to just do one project, watch, wait for it to fail, then another project, wait for it to fail. You do have to do multiple projects, and they have to fit with an overarching strategy. Geoffrey Moore talks about doing that kind of innovation in larger organizations and multiple approaches. But how do you get the CFO to fund those? Because they're not done for free, are they?
No, and that's why we often advocate that you should have a vision. We use the phrase, start with the end in mind. Well, maybe the end isn't always as crystal clear as you'd like to think, but you have to have a general direction as to what you're trying to do. And then, either by yourselves or working with a partner, it's establish a roadmap of short cycle projects, each of which has a benefit to it, either a tangible business benefit or a quality benefit, that allows the CFO to see that they're making steps along the journey, they're getting money for it. Nobody wants a 2-year implementation plan for complete digital transformation. They'll sign off a 3-month plan, but nobody will sign off a 2-year plan. That's why you have to have a vision in mind and you have to show you're making progress against that.
Who do you see leading these projects?
Yeah, good question. I think that's another thing that's changed in the marketplace, because remember, this was the area of IT. Traditional IT suggested, well, here's my applications, and as a business, you'll adapt to these applications and off we go. I think what digital does is turns that on its head a little bit. The leadership team have the opportunity to think about what they want to do, and then they turn to IT to say, okay, so what data and processes and building blocks do I need to put in place to deliver that vision? Leadership can come from many areas. I think it has to come from the leadership team. I would probably advocate that it's the line of business or the C-levels who have that end state vision. So it could be a supply chain director if you're looking towards supply chain. It could be a CFO if they're looking at changing the way they do their administration or prepare themselves for M&A activity. It could be a CMO if they're thinking about, well, what do I need to be in the marketplace? How do I differentiate? The role of the CIO is to foster and enable that innovation. But in many cases, they're not necessarily the best equipped to lead it, because it has to start with a business innovation. It's a business strategy, not a technology strategy. The technology strategy supports the business.
And if the company is looking at a revolution, i.e. a complete digital transformation, is that best led by the CEO?
I can't say it's necessarily best led by one particular title. It's best led by the person or people who have the vision for where the company needs to be. But because it's transformative, it has to come from the top or near the top. It's unlikely that anybody else would feel equipped, empowered, or even incentivized to make the sort of business changes that we're talking about if you're talking complete business transformation.
What are the first steps a manufacturer should take on this journey?
I would say form the leadership team and give yourself the time and the space to think about what your business innovation strategy should be. You can do that, again, by yourselves. You can do that with a partner. Design thinking workshops are a popular way to start, because you put everything out on the table and you prioritize where you think the benefits are. But somehow you need to have that vision to start with. So if that comes through the leadership and the workshops, then that's a good way to start. Then, having done that, create the series of steps to get there. And then act very fast and be prepared to fail. Accept failure along the way, but as long as you're firm in terms of where the direction is, then a few missteps along the way isn't going to hurt.
You mentioned design thinking. I met with Mark Stickstone last year. I talked about service design, and he wrote the book, What is Design Thinking? Not many companies have that expertise internally, and not many vendors have that, to be honest, available externally. Is that something Infor offers as well?
Yeah, Infor does. We recognised a few years ago that design has to be a central part of what we do as a software provider, because the way that business software has to change, it can't be written from the database out. It has to be written from the user experience back in. We brought design in-house, and with that you bring a different category of people, a different style of people, different skill sets who are all schooled in design thinking and building user experiences back into the database. So those skills can then be put to practice in leading design thinking workshops. We do have that capability, but as it came up in the panel discussions this morning, said, you know, one of the things that you may want to consider in your graduate recruitments is recruit people who you wouldn't normally recruit, and maybe somebody with a graduate degree in design thinking is one of the people you would bring in, as well as software engineers. So bring in different style of people other than people who are skilled just in shop floor or skilled just in engineering. Mix it up a little bit.
You mentioned a couple of examples where things have gone well for companies and they've transformed themselves, and you track have really seen a massive difference in terms of their bottom line. Have you seen what mistakes people make?
That's why I really often talk about starting with an end in mind. I think the most common mistakes are probably, you know when you're making a mistake if you're permanently in pilot mode. In other words, you've started a series of digital initiatives. They look great. You might have the best virtual reality tool, or you've put some automation in or some system that looks superb. But if it's not working toward an end business goal, then it's probably not going to be sustained. And that's when projects start, go into pilot, and then never become mainstream. And I think one of the areas we often see that is if maybe, certainly in a company that's trying to have a different relationship with its customers, if the front-end systems are not connected to the back-end systems. That's probably one of the areas that we've seen before. You want to offer the ability to offer a customized product to your customers. But if you really can't follow that up with the supply chain and the production area and the distribution element at the end, you're not really going to fulfill that. You have to join the back-end systems to the front-end systems and have that as part of your digital strategy.
Would you say that benchmarking things before you start and then having a very clear understanding of how you measure things as you progress is also very important?
Pretty much essential. Having said that, companies haven't necessarily been great at doing that, but we do encourage them to think about where their current starting point is, because the idea of producing the business case is not to just get the capital in order to start the project. The idea of doing the business case is to show year-on-year continuous improvement. Having that baked into your go-forward process is part of being a mature business, and a mature business with a digital strategy that's also mature.
Andrew, thank you.
You're welcome.